preached in the great hall like that of Lincoln College to a very serious congregation. In the evening, I preached at South Petherton, once a place of renown and the capital of a Saxon kingdom, as is vouched by a palace of King Ina still remaining and a very large and ancient church. I suppose the last blow given to it was by Judge Jeffreys, who, after Monmouth's rebellion, hanged so many of the inhabitants and drove so many away that it is never likely to lift up its head again. City Road Chapel opened. Sunday, November 1st, was the day appointed for opening the new chapel in the City Road. It is perfectly neat, but not fine, and contains far more people than the foundry. I believe, together with the morning chapel, as many as the tabernacle. Many were afraid that the multitudes crowding from all parts would have occasioned much disturbance, but they were happily disappointed. There was none at all. All was quietness, decency, and order. I preached on part of Solomon's prayer at the dedication of the temple, and both in the morning and afternoon, when I preached on the 140 and 4,000 standing with the Lamb on Mount Zion, God was eminently present in the midst of the congregation. Monday the 2nd, I went to Chatham and preached in the evening to a lively, loving congregation. Tuesday the 3rd, I went by water to Sheerness, our room being far too small for the people that attended. I sent to the governor to desire what had been allowed me before, the use of the chapel. He refused me uncivilly enough, affecting to doubt whether I was in orders. So I preached to as many as it would contain in our own room. Wednesday the 4th, I took a view of the old church at Minster. Once a spacious and elegant building, it stands pleasantly on the top of a hill and commands all the country round. We went from thence to Queensborough, which contains above 50 houses and sends 2 members to Parliament. Surely the whole Isle of Sheppey is now about a shadow of what it was once. Thursday the 5th, I returned to Chatham, and the following morning set out on stagecoach for London. At the end of Stroud, I chose to walk up the hill, leaving the coach to follow me. But it was in no great haste. It did not overtake me till I had walked about 5 miles. I cared not if it had been 10. The more I walk, the sounder I sleep. Sunday the 15th. Having promised to preach in the evening at St. Antheline's Church, I had desired, one, to have a coach ready at the door when the service at the new chapel was ended. But he had forgotten, so that, after preaching and meeting the society, I was obliged to walk as fast as I could to the church. The people were so wedged together that it was with difficulty I got in. The church was extremely hot. But this I soon forgot, for it pleased God to send a gracious rain upon his inheritance. Sunday the 29th, I was desired to preach a charity sermon in St. Luke's Church, Old Street. I doubt whether it was ever so crowded before. The fear of God seemed to possess the whole audience. In the afternoon, I preached at the new chapel and at 7 in St. Margaret's, Rood Lane, fully as much crowded as St. Luke's. Is then the scandal of the cross ceased? Wesley goes north. 1779, Monday, March 15. I began my tour through England and Scotland, the lovely weather continuing, such as the oldest man alive has not seen before, for January, February, and half of March. In the evening, I preached at Stroud, the next morning at Gloucester, designing to preach in Stanley at 2, and at Tewkesbury in the evening. But the minister of Grattan, near Stanley, sending me word that I was welcome to the use of his church, I ordered notice to be given that the service would begin there at 6 o'clock. Stanley Chapel was thoroughly filled at 2. It is 18 years since I was there before. Many of those whom I saw here then were now gray-headed, and many were gone to Abraham's bosom. May we follow them as they did Christ. Thursday the 25th. I preached in the new house which Mr. Fletcher has built and Natalie Wood. The people here exactly resemble those at Kingswood, only they are more simple and teachable. But for want of discipline, the immense pains which he has taken with them has not done the good which might have been expected. I preached at Shrewsbury in the evening and on Friday the 26th about noon in the assembly room at Broseley. It was well we were in the shade, for the sun shone as hot as it usually does at midsummer. We walked from thence to Colebrook Dale and took a view of the bridge, which is shortly to be thrown over the Severn. It is one arch, 100 feet broad, 52 high, and 18 wide, all of cast iron, weighing many hundred tons. I doubt whether the Colossus of Rhodes weighed much more. Thursday, April 15, I went to Halifax, where a little thing had lately occasioned great disturbance. An angel blowing a trumpet was placed on the sounding board over the pulpit. Many were vehemently against this, others as vehemently for it. But a total end was soon put to the contest, for the angel vanished away. The congregations morning and evening were very large, and the work of God seems to increase in depth as well as extent. Sunday, May 2nd, Dr. Kershaw, the vicar of Leeds, desired me to assist him at the sacrament. It was a solemn season. We were 10 clergymen and 700 or 800 communicants. Mr. Atkinson desired me to preach in the afternoon. Such a congregation had been seldom seen there, but I preached to a much larger in our own house at 5, and I found no want of strength. Monday, June 28. I preached in the new preaching house at Robin Hood's Bay, and then went on to Scarborough. Tuesday, the 29th, I spent agreeably and profitably with my old friends, and on my way to Bridlington, Wednesday the 30th, took a view of Flamborough Head. It is a huge rock rising perpendicularly from the sea to an immense height and giving shelter to an innumerable multitude of sea fowl of various kinds. I preached in the evening at Bridlington and afterward heard a very uncommon instance of paternal affection. A gentleman of the town had a favorite daughter whom he set up in a milliner's shop. Some time after, she had a concern for her soul and believed it her duty to enter into the society. Upon this, her good father forbade her his house, demanding all the money he had laid out and requiring her instantly to sell all her goods in order to make the payment. Wesley attended by felons. Wednesday, July 21st. When I came to Coventry, I found notice had been given for my preaching in the park, but the heavy rain prevented. I sent to the mayor, desiring the use of the town hall. He refused, but the same day gave the use of it to a dancing master. I then went to the women's market. Many soon gathered together and listened with all seriousness. I preached there again the next morning, Thursday the 22nd, and again in the evening. Then I took coach for London. I was nobly attended. Behind the coach were 10 convicted felons, loudly blaspheming and rattling their chains. By my side sat a man with a loaded blunderbuss and another upon the coach. Sunday the 25th, both the chapels were full enough. On Monday I retired to Lewisham to write. Tuesday, August 3rd, our conference began. It continued and ended in peace and love. Sunday the 8th, I was at West Street in the morning and at the new chapel in the evening, when I took a solemn leave of the affectionate congregation. This was the last night which I spent at the foundry. What hath God wrought there in 41 years? Friday, August 13th, Monmouth. As I was going down a steep pair of stairs, my foot slipped, and I fell down several steps. Falling on the edge of one of them, it broke the case of an almanac, which was in my pocket, all to pieces. The edge of another stair met my right buckle and snapped the steel shape of it in two, but I was not hurt. So doth our good Master give his angels charge over us. In the evening I preached at Brecknock. Make your will before you sleep. Thursday, September 23rd. In the evening, one sat behind me in the pulpit at Bristol, who was one of our first masters at Kingswood. A little after he left the school, he likewise left the society. Riches then flowed in upon him, with which, having no relations, Mr. Spencer designed to do much good after his death. But God said unto him, Thou fool, 2 hours after he died intestate and left all his money to be scrambled for. Reader, if you have not done it already, make your will before you sleep. Wednesday, October 6th. At 11 I preached in Winchester, where there are 4,500 French prisoners. I was glad to find they have plenty of wholesome food and are treated in all respects with great humanity. In the evening I preached at Portsmouth Common. Thursday the 7th I took a view of the camp adjoining the town and wondered to find it as clean and as neat as a gentleman's garden. But there was no chaplain. The English soldiers of this age have nothing to do with God. Friday the 8th. We took chase as usual at 2 and about 11 came to Cobham. Having a little leisure, I thought I could not employ it better than in taking a walk through the gardens. They are said to take up 400 acres and are admirably well laid out. They far exceed the celebrated gardens at Stowe. This night I lodged in the new house at London. How many more nights have I to spend there? 1780, Sunday, January 23rd. In the evening I retired to Lewisham to prepare matter who would believe it for a monthly magazine. Friday, February 4th, being the national fast, I preached the first at the new chapel and then at St. Peter's, Cornhill. What a difference in the congregation. Yet out of these stones God can raise up children to Abraham. Wesley at the German settlement. Monday, April 17th, I left Leeds in one of the roughest mornings I have ever seen. We had rain, hail, snow, and wind in abundance. About 9 I preached at Bramley, between 1 and 2 at Pudsey. Afterwards I walked to Fulneck, the German settlement. Mr. Moore showed us the house, chapel, hall, lodging rooms, the apartments of the widows, the single men and single women. He showed us likewise the workshops of various kinds, with the shops for grocery, drapery, mercury, hardware, and so on, with which, as well as with bread from their bakehouse, they furnish the adjacent country. I see not what but the mighty power of God can hinder them from acquiring millions, as they, 1, buy all materials with ready money at the best hand, 2, have above 100 young men, above 50 young women, many widows, and above 100 married persons, all of whom are employed from morning to night, without any intermission, in various kinds of manufactures, not for journeyman's wages, but for no wages at all, save a little very plain food and raiment, as they have, 3, a quick sale for all their goods, and sell them all for ready money. But can they lay up treasure on earth and at the same time lay up treasure in heaven? Saturday, May 20th, I took one more walk through Holyrood House, the mansion of ancient kings. But how melancholy an appearance does it now make. The stately rooms are dirty as stables. The colors of the tapestry are quite faded. Several of the pictures are cut and defaced. The roof of the royal chapel has fallen in, and the bones of James V and the once beautiful Lord Darnley are scattered about like those of sheep or oxen. Such is human greatness. Is not a living dog better than a dead lion? Sunday the 21st. The rain hindered me from preaching at noon upon the castle hill. In the evening the house was well filled, and I was enabled to speak strong words. But I am not a preacher for the people of Edinburgh. Tuesday the 23rd, a gentleman took me to see Roslyn Castle, 8 miles from Edinburgh. It is now all in ruins. Only a small dwelling house is built on one part of it. The situation of it is exceedingly fine, on the side of a steep mountain hanging over a river, from which another mountain rises, equally steep and clothed with wood. At a little distance is the chapel, which is in perfect preservation, both within and without. I should never have thought it had belonged to anyone less than a sovereign prince. The inside is far more elegantly wrought with variety of scripture histories and stonework than I believe can be found again in Scotland, perhaps not in all England. The Bishop of Durham's Tapestry. Wednesday the 31st, I went to Mr. Parker's at Shincliffe, near Durham. The congregation being far too large to get into the house, I stood near his door. It seemed as if the whole village were ready to receive the truth in the love thereof. Perhaps their earnestness may provoke the people of Durham to jealousy. In the afternoon, we took a view of the castle at Durham, the residence of the bishop. The situation is wonderfully fine, surrounded by the river and commanding all the country. Many of the apartments are large and stately, but the furniture is mean beyond imagination. I know not where I have seen such in a gentleman's house or a man of 500 a year, except that of the Lord Lieutenant in Dublin. In the largest chambers, the tapestry is quite faded. Beside that, it is coarse and ill-judged. Take but one instance. In Jacob's vision, you see, on the one side, a little paltry ladder and an angel climbing it in the attitude of a chimney sweeper. And on the other side, Jacob staring at him from under a large silver-laced hat. Monday, June 5th, York. An arch news writer published a paragraph today, probably designed for wit, concerning the large pension which the famous Wesley received for defending the king. This so increased the congregation in the evening that scores were obliged to go away, and God applied that word to many hearts. I will not destroy the city for ten's sake. Genesis 18:32. Monday the 12th. About 11 I preached at Newton-upon-Trent to a large and very genteel congregation. Thence we went to Newark, but our friends were divided as to the place where I should preach. At length they found a convenient place, covered on three sides and on the fourth open to the street. It contained 2,000 or 3,000 people well, who appeared to hear as for life. Only one big man, exceedingly drunk, was very noisy and turbulent, till his wife seized him by the collar, gave him 2 or 3 hearty boxes on the ear, and dragged him away like a calf. But at length he got out of her hands, crept in among the people, and stood as quiet as a lamb. Wesley on Boston Stump. Friday the 16th. We went on to Boston, the largest town in the county, except Lincoln. From the top of the steeple, which I suppose is by far the highest tower in the kingdom, we had a view not only of all the town, but of all the adjacent country. Formerly this town was in the fens, but the fens are vanished away. A great part of them is turned into pasture, and part into arable land. At 6 the house contained the congregation, all of whom behaved in the most decent manner. Wednesday the 28th I went to Sheffield, but the house was not ready, so I preached in the square. I can hardly think I am entered this day into the 78th year of my age. By the blessing of God, I am just the same as when I entered the 28th. This hath God wrought, chiefly by my constant exercise, my early rising, and preaching morning and evening. Monday, September 11. As I drew near Bath, I wondered what had drawn such a multitude of people together, till I learned that one of the members for the city had given an ox to be roasted whole. But their sport was sadly interrupted by heavy rain, which sent them home faster than they came, many of whom dropped in at our chapel, where I suppose they never had been before. Wesley at 7:00.